You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 331. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. I don't really know where I am because the thing that never happens to this show has happened. And it happened to me, of all people. Me, Mr. Technology over here. We were just, 40 minutes into recording. What I thought was it was a pretty interesting discussion of what was in our year-end lists on punknews.org, and then my computer, which contained about one third of the discussion, I don't even understand what happened. Just suddenly I was looking at the login screen.
You know what it was, Adam? You were joking about all the celebrities that died this year, and so the universe taught you a lesson and made the podcast die right before your eyes. That's what happened.
We did this whole shtick about 2016 killing everyone, and then I think the Reaper was like, "Look, buddy, I'm not going to kill you, but fuck off." And then he reset my computer.
No, I think it's because you didn't include the Descendants record on your list.
I don't understand.
It's punk rock karma just bit you in the ass.
I am completely befuddled now. So whatever. That's John Gentile in Philadelphia. This is Ricky Frankel in Los Angeles, or who fucking cares? We're gonna record some stupid whatever is left of our podcast, and you're all gonna have to live with it. So, yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, you know what? We didn't really get too far in. We sort of just talked amongst ourselves for 40 minutes before we started. So we actually have a whole structure here that we can run through. So, yeah. Anyways, I guess. You know, technical issues aside, Mr. John Gentile, we got any mail?
Oh, we got some mail. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. I guess about 4 weeks ago now, we talked about the time that my friend Greg Gordon and his creepy mom took me to a religious concert. And I think, Adam, you talked about a story. You take it to a Christian rock show too, right? Right?
I talked a little bit about the genre.
Yeah, so anyway, this is from Camillo. Good evening. A couple of podcasts ago, you guys were talking about Christian music and stopping the show to pray and save people and whatnot. And it reminded me of one of the first concerts that I went to. I didn't go to many as a kid, and when we did, it was usually orchestra stuff. We were homeschooled, and so a lot of our friends were by default super Christian. One time, a family took me to a huge arena-sized show with a power lineup of Christian rock praise bands. I can't actually remember who any of them were, but I think Ryan K was there. I must have been about 12 or 13. At one point during the show, everything stopped and people were asked to put their hands up if they thought they were going to heaven. That's actually kind of audacious, to tell you the truth. Then they invited anybody who wanted to go back into a back area where they could be saved. Being the stubborn Catholic child that I was at the time, my hands were firmly and confidently in the air, and I was pretty smug about it among all the Protestants around me who probably considered Catholicism to be basically paganism. I think your conversation centered around whether parents should be upset about other parents taking their kids to these kinds of things. My answer would be a firm yes. I don't know how my parents felt about it. We never discussed it, and I don't think it had any lasting ill effects, and I'm not sure if they were even completely aware of what I went to. I plan to be a pretty open-minded parent and let my kids make their own decisions, but I would be livid at another parent who put them in this manipulative and frankly abusive situation. It goes beyond questioning my parents' skills or exposing them to different viewpoints and cultures and gets into the territory of trying to indoctrinate them. No good. And Camillo has a PS. He says, I think Tom is super wrong in his "it will be all right" approach to Trump. It's not all right. The dude is damaging and dangerous on so many fronts. It could be all right, but only if he and others are resistant consistently and intelligently. In some ways, I get what he's saying, but could we please not sleep on the resurgence of fascism and white nationalism here and abroad?
Cool. There was a lot in there you could chew on.
Okay.
I was raised Catholic, so whenever I had that situation where I was around Protestants, I just like smugly assumed that, you know, well, looking at history, I'm the OG here. So the rest of you all made up your shit after you got angry. But
plus, yeah, we have the cool hats.
But we do.
This is from Sean. Hey guys, I'm a bit behind on my punk news podcast listening, but I'd like to chime in on the vinyl discussion you guys had on episode 328. Oh, this is a good letter. I'm 16 and I recently started collecting records. I think part of the appeal to me is that the records force you to make listening to an album an experience. I pay for Spotify and I listen to a lot of albums on my commute to and from school. No matter how good an album is, at a certain point, I just find myself tuning out a bit when listening to Spotify. When I put a record on, I can focus on nothing but the record. It's the equivalent of going to a movie theater. I feel like my theory is confirmed by my experience with the latest Jeff Rosenstock release. Being such a highly anticipated album for me, the night of October 14th, I stowed away in my basement with my phone and earbuds and just focused all of my attention on the album. It essentially triggered the same response as listening to a record. But then again, I'm not much of an audiophile anyways. On a different point, I was wondering how you even build up a substantial collection with record prices being as high as they are. My collection is tiny, just 7 records, and I got 2 of those for free from Epitaph Records. Yet I still feel like I'm spending too much on records. Should I be buying directly from a label's website, from Discogs, or is supporting your local record store an important part of being a collector? And that is from Sean, and he hopes that Adam is back on the podcast soon.
I'm here. I'm fucking it all up. But yay.
I mean, you know, here's the thing. Yeah, my record collection's probably moderately sized compared to, you know, the real big collectors. But it didn't happen overnight at all. I mean, I've been collecting, oh God, 7 years now. And, you know, I think it takes a lot of time, and just kind of patience. You kind of go, what really took the longest was finding all of the records that I had on MP3 that I absolutely loved, and then getting those on vinyl. That took the longest. That's pretty much over now. And that's probably just finished like this year. When it comes to the new stuff, what I would say is it's really important to support local record stores. But the thing is, if you're into the collecting, you know, and getting the first pressing like I am, I have a list of stuff I will not buy online because it's just the black vinyl and I don't need it right away. So I have like a long list on my notes on my iPhone. Like if I were to go to Amoeba or CD Trader near me or somewhere else, but if I go to Amoeba, I have a list of stuff that I will buy there, but not online. When a new release is coming out, I want that first pressing color vinyl from either Fat, Epitaph, Red Scare, whoever. So that's when I do it. New releases, I think, are better for online. That's just how I do it, though. But keep going and just be patient. This is not, you know, what's great about vinyl, too, is that it gets you to slow down and not have to get everything immediately like Spotify does. So it kind of just slows everything down. And that's just sort of an overall theme, I would say, to have when collecting. And also, you don't need to buy a ton at the same time. It's all about the hunt. The hunt is like 60% of what makes it fun too. So yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about it.
I grapple with this quite a bit because I buy vinyl at a way slower rate than Ricky does. There are times where I'm a little bit worried that like my anemic collection isn't really growing to the degree that I guess my ambitions are putting on it. But I think that Ricky's absolutely right in that the hunt is all that matters in this. So
right.
the key to that is if you are going to use the internet as part of what you're doing, that's where you need some sort of arbitrary budget. So if you are going to a physical store and making an event of like going into a place, especially if you're not in a place that's awash in stores like me, like if I'm in the situation where I can go into a store and I would not normally be able to find something like that locally, then I might spend a little bit more in that store, but I'm buying the things that I'm finding in that store that I just can't, you know, I can't leave without these records. If I was to just go home and sit down and open up, you know, three tabs and one's got like Discogs and one has, you know, fucking Amazon and one has eBay, then, you know, I could just empty a whole bank account immediately buying all of the things that I've ever wanted to buy. But I mean, what's the fun in that? In that you are suddenly poor. And then what do you have to look for afterwards? So, I mean, the internet screws it up a little bit because, I mean, it makes the hunt seem a little bit artificial because, you know, oh, you could just go find this somewhere and pay someone for it. But, you know, there'd be dragons if you go that way. So
I'm going to disagree with the guys a little bit. My first advice is, you know what? You don't always need the newest record. You need to get a record right when it comes out. If it's your like one of your favorite bands, then maybe get the limited one and snatch it up off, you know, the record label's pre-order or whatever. But if it's a band you kind of like or a band you might be interested in, you know, just wait for the price to drop and get it then. My perspective is always, you know, 10 $1 records are just as good as one $10 record. But actually, no such thing as a $10 record anymore. It kind of sucks for you in that. Right now, you're at the height of vinyl expense. I mean, don't, first of all, at your age and now, don't buy any records as investments. They will drop. You will lose money. Now is the time to be selling vinyl if you have money that you have because it's worth money. Now is the time to be selling. Second is like, I wouldn't be spending $30, $25 on a record. I mean, if unless it's like a band you really, really, really love. My advice is take that $25 you would have spent on one record, go to the dollar bin, pick up 10 Billy Joel records, 10 classic rock records, or 10 soul records, and then like 5 or 10 weird records that you have no idea what they are. And you'll get you'll get more enjoyment out of that than one good record for 25 or 30 bucks. If it's a band you really, 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 really want, then I say buy it off the label, the pre-order or whatever. Or if you go to a show and it's a band you really like, records are usually cheaper there. Buy it from the band at the show for like $15 or so. But I wouldn't go spending a whole lot of money on record pre-orders and stuff. I mean, listen, the vinyl color thing, it's all a huge gimmick. And unless you are flipping records in like the next week that you buy them, it's a waste of money. So I wouldn't waste a whole lot of money on, you know, record variants or different colors unless it's like your extremely favorite band. But other than that, I would get the cheapest record you can and then take that extra money you have and go to the used record store. You can get I bought a Smiths record for $2 once. I bought a Morrissey record for $1 once. I got a Slayer record for $5 once. That's how you amass a record collection is you flip, you know, you go to the record store every week, $10, $15, whatever you can afford, and flip through and get cool, cheap stuff every week. Or, you know, every other week or once per month or whatever. And before you know it, you'll have a large record collection with lots of cool records. I wouldn't waste your money on the newest thing that everyone's talking about because it'll lower in price. And you're just blowing $35 when you could have spent $35 on 35 $1 records. That's my advice.
Yeah, I just want to just add the Discogs thing is interesting because it lets you know what the it shows you the market value. It shows you like the lowest something has been sold for, the highest, and then the median. Discogs could be very dangerous for record collectors because it's incredibly easy to find the exact pressing you like. I like the color thing. Personally, I also like getting it signed. If I go to a show too. But when it comes to Discogs, kind of destroying the hunt. The issue with Discogs is you gotta, and this is how I go about it. I really don't, I probably overpaid for a few records on it, but I kind of learned my lesson after that. The thing about it is, you can't, oh God, I just lost my train of thought. You gotta make sure you're not, like, don't get sucked into needing to have something right away. I've been waiting, you know, I mean, there's some Fat Records releases on color vinyl that are still incredibly hard to find and still very, very expensive. And like one of my white whales, and it kills me inside every time I see it go on sale. Like I just want to drink Clorox right when I see it go on sale because it's so expensive. And that's Dead to Me's Cuban Ballerina. And only like 100 of them came out on clear vinyl. and they go for over $200 each. And I'm not paying $200 for a vinyl, for a record like that. I'm not going to say a vinyl, but and I've only done that once, and that was for something so, and I paid less than that, but the you know, there's one record that I have that I paid a lot for, and I'm fine with it, but I really don't want to have to do that again. So I'm just sort of waiting on stuff. The other one also, you know, the Lawrence Arms El Calcutta on blue, over 200 or like 175. I'm not doing that. So it's about budget and doing it smart, and not only knowing the record and the pressing, but also knowing the market, and you don't want to get ripped off. So that's sort of like the new part of the online hunt that I'm finding.
Ricky, Cuban Ballerina on clear just sold for $15 yesterday.
No, it didn't. Couldn't have.
This is from David. Adam, you and I are roughly the same age. We got into punk in similar ways. We are both married with kids. Until recently, I've always been in the Austin, Texas area, which seemed to be a similar from... I was in the Austin, Texas area, which seemed similar to your own home scene. So I feel like we have a lot of similarities. So here's my advice to you regarding your fears about the future and your involvement with punk news and the podcast. While nothing can replace the joy of being a husband and father, if you give up your passions, you are just admitting defeat, and we are not old enough to admit defeat yet. I gave up punk to an extent 2 years ago when my son was born. I quit going to shows. I didn't play the loudest, fastest hardcore in my house, and for the sake of kiddo and my wife. But I was dying on the inside for those 2 years. I guess what I'm saying is I understand if you need to take a break, but there is an option to find a balance, and that is what I suggest you do. Am I at the punk club every weekend? No. I do, however, still go to shows, buy albums, and write into this crazy podcast and stay connected. If you need to back off a little, I understand, but don't ever try to give up something as important as punk is. If you are anything like me, if you do need to lighten the load, then Godspeed and I'll support you. You will be missed. I hope that is not the case, but as a father, a businessman, and a husband, I will understand completely. And this is to me, John, don't start reporting on Justin Bieber, Donna Summer, or some random four-piece orchestra from Swaziland. If you are going to drop in something absurd, do an op-ed about what fruits and vegetables are the most punk. Love what you guys do, from Dave.
All I heard was dying on the inside, and then my brain started playing to me The Other Shoe by Fucked Up, which that's the chorus. Like there's a
female, oh, dying on the
inside, dying on the inside,
the angelic voiced angelic voiced
Ben Cook,
Young Gov, Ben Cook, who sounds like a 13-year-old girl but is a 28-year-old man.
I know, that's one of those things where like you hear it and you're like, oh, I guess that's like them like collaborating with Vivian Girls or something like that again, and then you're like, nope, it's Ben Cook. I'm not planning to abandon the punk rock universe or anything like that for the sake of my wife and family. Screw them. No. In fact, I am planning to double down on things by cutting out the stuff that is frustrating me.
That sort of seemed like what you were, after that podcast, what it would seem like you were kind of going.
Is that the gist of what I'm doing?
Like kind of just like cutting the fat, like trimming the fat. And then, cause you know, I mean, what you told us, later on, I totally got like, there's some shit on there I would not want to do either.
There are certain things in my life that I don't have control about. And I am too, I'm on in years enough that I don't want to fight with the stuff that I don't control about. So I am selfishly sort of cut my punk news responsibilities down to the things that make me happy. And I guess the podcast is included, so I'm not going anywhere with regards to that. And then I'm gonna do some other stuff on the side, which I'm not ready to announce yet, but I'm totally working on.
And this is from Star F Raps. Hey guys, I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed the Christmas special you put together. Great job all around. Well, thank you, Star F Raps.
Oh my god, that was fun.
I've only heard the song.
Oh, you haven't heard the whole thing yet, dude?
I have only heard
so good.
John sent me the song, which I listened to, and then I'm like, well, wife, you want to hear this?
Wait, which song did I send you?
You sent me Holly Jolly Christmas.
Oh, well, there's another song in there, Adam.
Yeah,
Ricky, so, you know what song I'm referring to?
The Ramones one, right?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
there are a bunch of songs. In
there. So I've heard the one, my daughter is incredibly excited about this, though. I have to tell you, because I
she was on it. She was on it too.
Well, see, I couldn't find a time to sit down and like record myself singing a song for John Gentile without feeling like a total knob. And then I was finally like, I'm like, all right, the only way that I can pull this off without looking like a crazy person is to involve my kid. So I'm like, Nora, come with me. Daddy's got to sing a song. So we went and we sat in front of my, where I record my podcasts here. And she sat on the little stool that I have. And I stood there and she put one of the earbuds in so that she could hear the karaoke track we were singing over. And then I sang this whole song and she's sitting there the whole time with her eyes are wide. And she's like, this is the best thing ever. And then, so we did it in one take and sent it to John and she's like, let's sing more songs. And I'm like, no, I'm like, that's all we're doing right now. But she's been wandering around my house singing that song for the past 4 or 5 days.
It's a good tune, man. It is a good tune. That's one of my favorite Christmas songs.
She is just, it's burned into her brain now. So,
well, listen, Adam, you've got to listen to this podcast. There's a little surprise in there for you. I think that I'm surprised you haven't found yet.
I don't consume most of the media I'm involved in creating. I suppose I should.
This is worth it. This is where I usually don't listen to the episodes I'm on. I just kind of scroll through them to see what everything's okay. But this one is worth listening to all the way through. Because, I mean, John did a phenomenal job with it.
Well, thank you, Ricky.
No, absolutely. Like, that must have been such a bitch to edit.
It actually wasn't. This started out as all the best punk news ideas start out. I say, wouldn't it be completely asinine if we did this? And then I say, yes, it would be completely asinine if we did this. And then I do it, you see.
Well, it's okay. I felt the same way about one aspect of it because I don't know if you remember, but I'm like, hey, let's see if CJ Ramone will.
No, actually, Ricky is completely responsible for CJ because.
And I was just like, okay, he's gonna do it.
Ricky is completely responsible for CJ Ramone being on it, and honestly, that is one of the things that made this extra special for me.
Yeah,
is one thing at Punk News, and it's something I'm always juggling. Is you don't want to ask people where it seems like you're insane to ask that person. You know, like if we caught up, if we said Iggy Pop, he's not a good example. If we said Beyonce, do you want to be on our Christmas special? Like. It would just be weird and awkward, you know, and ungainly, right. You know, but then sometimes you can be a little too protective. And sometimes if you just ask people, they'll be down, you know? And so I said, screw it. Let's just ask CJ Ramone if he'll be on our stupid Christmas special. And he said, yes.
Thing, like, I was like half joking, though. I'm like, I just said, I'm like, yeah, if he does, it'll be a miracle. But I'm totally of the mindset that he will not do it, and he did it, which was awesome.
And now he did like such a perfect job. Like he's got that heavy Brooklyn accent or whatever that accent is.
Yeah,
and so he's playing the part of a narrator, which is usually like some like refined English guy, and it's CZ Ramone saying, "And now we've got in the classic New York accent, and now we've got a tale to tell." And I'm just very pleased with the way this came out. And I wonder if I committed a faux pas though. Actually, I forgot to have Tom Trauma credited on it, which I feel so bad about. The reason that I don't even know why that happened, because I wanted to have CJ Ramone credit all the main people, and so I should have included Tom on that. Maybe at the time I hadn't asked him if he wanted to do it yet, but I really wish I feel bad about that. So Tom Trauma's on this, but I wonder if I committed a faux pas because we have CJ Ramone on it. But then we have Scott Heisel sing a Ramones song, which I didn't even think about at the time. Like maybe that's was you know ungainly or you know. And then also I had Cassie Ramone on it, and I didn't even make the connection anymore that Cassie Ramone, her name comes from the Ramones, you know. So I hope I didn't commit a faux pas in that way. I mean, CJ seems pretty cool, but well.
I don't think CJ claims any particular ownership over like the cultural permeation of the Ramones in music or anything, so I think he'd be cool.
Honestly, when I talk to him in person, he's a really laid back guy that he doesn't like. I don't think he goes. He likes to does that petty shit at all.
We got to give a special shout out to Dom Davi, who did an amazing job as not Ebenezer Scrooge, as Jacob Marley, and also Lynn Lay, surprise contender for champion of the podcast. Lynn Lay, she was just going to be one of the Frankel kids, but she also played the part of young Adam White's girlfriend, Nell. I think it's Nell. And she did just an amazing job. Like, Lynn Lay really got a bad cop. And it was just great. This is just, I mean, not to compliment myself, but I'm going to compliment myself. This is just one of these asinine ideas where just everything worked out. Like, the first mixtape, like, against all odds, just this crazy idea that shouldn't work just seemed to work. So, Adam White, you got to listen to this, man.
Oh, I will. I guess.
It is. You're just going to be like, this is fucking ridiculous that this worked out. I can totally hear you saying that.
All right, so let's talk about some stories that happened this week. I guess we'll play a song before we get to that. I kept switching up my song because of what we were talking about in the amazing now lost section. So I guess I'm gonna play something here that I hope is a newish sounding thing to a bunch of our listeners. So once you do get to the top 20 lists that we all released, one of the bands on mine around number five or say, was a band from Ottawa, Ontario here called A Tribe Called Red. And A Tribe Called Red is they're a First Nations, DJ, electronic DJ collective. And, does that mean anything to you? Like First Nations, is that a Canadian thing?
Well, that means Native Americans, right?
Yeah, but not Americans. But yeah,
so they aren't. Native American doesn't mean United States of America. It means North or South American, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean it does. I mean, like the term isn't used.
Would you call like the Aztecs though Native American?
Yes, I would.
All right. So, anyways, it's one of those things where like if different areas of the world they'll use like Aboriginal as the thing for it. Anyways, in Canada. The First Nations is what they use. So anyway, so it's a First Nations DJ collective out of Ottawa that they do this mix of traditional powwow music. So basically like drum circles and vocals and things like that, with hip hop, with like electronica, with dubstep, with all these various electronic music and hip hop related genres, and they've become, I think, sort of a force as far as Canadian independent music goes. In that there's a huge conversation that's going on in Canada over the last few years, in particular in the mainstream, with regards to the plight of First Nations people in Canada and the past kind of cultural genocides that the Canadian government has committed against them. And there's a huge history there, and it's really starting to become more of a mainstream conversation, in that we have a government in place right now that is willing to at least converse about these things as opposed to sweeping them under the rug. So the arts community that's talking about them is becoming more and more prominent. So A Tribe Called Red talks about all this stuff. So they had a record that came out this year called We Are the Halusa Nation, and it has a bunch of amazing guest stars on it and all kinds of crazy things going on. So this song in particular that I'm going to play may have, one of the biggest American connections on it, in that it features Yasin Bey or like Mos Def. It also features a couple other guests on it, a Canadian Iraqi Canadian hip hop MC guy named Narcy, or he plays as the narcissist, and his name is actually, what is it here, it's also Yassine, it's Yassine Alsman, or sorry, Salman. So anyways, so the main vocalist on this, it's Yassine Bey and Narcy, and then there is a northern Quebec based Aboriginal group called Black Bear that is playing on this as well. So this is a song from A Tribe Called Red. It's called R.E.D. It is, as far as I can understand, the single from the record that they had come out this year. But it does a pretty good in 3 minutes explanation of what this group is and all the kind of the various influences and everything that they're bringing in and the message that they're trying to put out. So check this out. It's cool.
Bismillah. Showing sure living by the G code. What the fuck is Fleek though? Don't ask them, what do he know? What I forgot is better than whatever they remember. Never mind, I'm off it, it's quiet form. Time to put the temper tantrum to the quiet corner. Hush, that's enough, said the ruler. No suckers allowed to break bread or asunder. The daylight, lightning, and the thunder. Sun, moon, stars, and the hunger. Abundance in bundles, blessings in troubles. Towers and tunnels, views and valleys, waves and peaks. The streets you from, son, planet Earth. And ain't scared of no Mars attack. What type of bars is that? Stay off my jack. I'm out there corny riot garments, top five. Dying on and on them, super fly, slick a top bro. Eagles diving on them. You why you lying, homie? You won't play with my emotions, Smokey. Big chief heart rate, big beak, B-E-Y-I-C, straight jacket, come clean. Big said it was a dream, now it's a living thing. With you and living kings, I mean it, I mean. You and living kings, I mean it, I mean. I mean it, I mean. Y'all seen it, y'all seen in the R.E.D. I mean it, I mean. Original nation, whoop on solid, I mean. I mean it, I mean. Straight jacket, come clean, y'all seen it, y'all seen. In the R.E.D. Original nation, whoop on solid, whip, whip.
All right, we're back. Let's talk about some stories before, you know, anything else explodes. So we're going to talk primarily here about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The inductees were listed, and it has very few punk related things that we want to acknowledge. John, what happened?
What happened was everyone was all excited. Ooh, the Bad Brains are nominees. Ooh, the MC5 are nominees. And sure enough, they got passed over for the likes of, and actually even the Cars got passed over, which really surprised me. Bad Brains got passed over for Pearl Jam for one. They also got passed over for, let's see here. I clicked on the wrong link, man.
Tupac Shakur, Journey.
No, those guys got nominated.
Oh,
they didn't.
Sorry.
Oh, here, I got it right here. Here we go. So the people that did get in are. Tupac did get in.
Yeah.
Well, I'm wrong. I thought Tupac got in. Journey got in. Yes, got in. ELO, Joan Baez, and Pearl Jam. I gotta say, I don't know if the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is doing any favor. And also, quite poor Nile Rodgers of Chic. After he got denied on his 11th nomination, which is brutal. It's like, what are they doing to the poor guy? The question is, is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame doing itself any favors by nominating the Bad Brains and getting pressed for, you know, if you will, trying to legitimize punk rock and then just kicking it back down? I used to be more of a fan of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but more and more, as Adam White so eloquently pointed out, it's becoming more and more of a sham or just a pointless thing. Like Tupac over Bad Brains. Not that I'm anti-Tupac. Actually, I think Tupac overrated. Let's use Journey as an example. Journey over the Bad Brains or MC5. They might have sold more records, but are they more relevant to rock and roll? I mean, Journey, you know what I mean?
Well, the way I look at it is that, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a museum. So they're going to put on some sort of exhibit about the people that are in. And I can't imagine a universe in which I want to walk through a Journey exhibit or a Pearl Jam exhibit for that matter. And, you know, as opposed to someone that I consider to have more historical relevance, like, you know, I'm no Depeche Mode maniac, but I would way more want to see a Depeche Mode exhibit in a museum than I would one for Journey. So if they're trying to, you know, get people in the door to see these things, they're not playing to me as their audience.
It also shows, you know, a part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now is like anyone can vote. And honestly, maybe it puts to question the concept of democracy itself, because I'm sure Tupac and Journey especially got bonus points from, you know, the public voting. And is Journey has more artistic merit than Bad Brains or MC5?
No, they sold more albums.
That's what I'm saying. So, you know, maybe democracy don't work too well.
No, I think it's direct democracy that's screwing this up. Democracy itself isn't a problem, but I think there should just be like some sort of council.
Some sort of college, you're saying, like an electoral college,
an electoral college from every state. This should not be called the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame anymore. I'm sorry, Tupac Shakur and Janet Jackson. I know she didn't get in, but these are not rock and roll artists. Okay, they may have been their music may be derived from it. Janet Jackson is pop for sure, and R&B probably, and then Tupac is just straight up hip hop. So I don't know why they're here.
Is Sam Cooke rock and roll?
I'm gonna be honest, I don't know who Sam Cooke is.
Oh, you don't know who Sam Cooke is? No. Sam Cooke is Bring It On Home to Me. What do you call it? I can't remember.
Hang on a second.
16 Candles. Which is really famous song. Oh, Cupid, pull back your bow and let that arrow flow.
Oh, okay, I'm seeing him. Okay, no. Oh, I know who he is. You could argue it because he was so early before he had a career like right when rock was kind of like becoming a thing.
The question. The problem is that hip hop, of course, comes from discos and soul. So are disco and soul rock and roll?
I wouldn't have disco. Soul maybe, disco no.
But is chic? Are they disco or are they soul or funk? You see, that does underscore the problem with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, you can't define what rock and roll is, you know?
Exactly. So what I would say is, I mean, if it were up to me, rename it the Pop Music Hall of Fame. That way you can get everyone in there. I kind of expected the Bad Brains not to get in.
See, I thought they would get in because they wanted to get not brownie points, but like respect points, if you will.
To be honest, like, how much respect do you really get from being inducted? There's nothing.
No,
like,
not the Bad Brains getting respect. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame getting some sort of legitimacy, saying, "Well, yes, we even have punk rock here. No, we know it's cool." You know,
every year it just goes the people that get in just goes down and down and down in quality. I thought the MC5 should have, of all of them, should have gotten in. Those guys rocked it so hard back in the day. That is a huge shame because they're not a band that a lot of classic rock people seem to know about, at least like in the mainstream things, but they influence so many people, and that's just a shame. Probably the Zombies. I'm only aware of like one Zombies hit, but I don't know. This thing's so stupid. This is like, why are we doing this? This is no better than the Academy Awards or the Grammys.
That is a question. Like, at this point, why are we doing this? You know, aside from
it doesn't need to happen. It's you know, just like the Academy Awards. This is just one big, you know, hooray for us, for the music industry. One big self pat on the back, and it's just irrelevant, and it's so smug. I mean, have you guys ever watched like those ceremonies? It is so self-congratulatory and nauseating. I have to turn it off.
I've never actually watched one of the Rock Hall induction ceremonies. If you only just because need to it watch seems clips. Like God, it seems like something I don't want to watch.
It's just listen. You could never pay me to sit through a whole one.
You can pay me to sit through it. I'm taking bids. You can pay me to sit through it.
But the thing is, like, if you watch a few clips, you're just like, you only need to watch a few minutes to get what's going on. It, you know, some cool performances by bands, and there'll probably be some artists that don't normally play together. And then it's like the Academy Awards. And, you know, they induct them, they do their really overdrawn speeches, and it's really dumb. So, I mean, the fact that the best bands that should have gotten in didn't get in because this place is really out of touch. And again, really dumb.
Journey over Bad Brains and MC5. That's a boo-boo. I mean, oof.
That is cold.
That's tough to explain, you know?
Right in, guys.
Yeah, so
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
So talking about other things that have, I was trying to make some sort of segue of like other disasters, but I don't even know if this is a disaster because it's, I don't know.
How about other things with competing interests?
Yeah, sure. So there is a famed DIY show spot called Burnt Ramen. Ramen?
Burnt Ramen.
Burnt Ramen, sorry. Burnt Ramen.
Burnt Ramen, that's a different guy.
Yeah. Burnt Ramen. And I tell you, like, I used to call like Fueled by Ramen Fueled by Ramen at one point because I don't know, I'd not spoken that word aloud at one point in my life, and it was just, it took me a while to unprogram my brain. Anyways, so this famed DIY show spot, Burnt Ramen, in Richmond, California, has been closed down. The city's fire code enforcement and planning departments closed the venue/living space last Friday. This would have been the Friday of December...
Like December 13th or something like that.
So, 6 people were living at the location. They were told that they could not return until the violations were corrected. The inspections were prompted by the recent ghost ship fire in Oakland, which claimed the lives of 36 people. Items needed to bring the venue back to code included 10 battery-powered smoke detectors, 3 ABC-rated fire extinguishers, 5 first aid kits, 20 ground fault circuit interrupter or ground fault interrupter wall outlets, 2 exit signs, and 10 monoxide detectors, along with a rollout ladder to provide an upstairs fire escape, and an extra large framed steel door that opens out and has a safety push bar. Now, John, I feel that you know something about what's going on here. I don't at all. So for me, reading this and seeing this list of like, sensible building safety equipment that they want in place, I don't read that and go like, fuck the man. I read that and go like, yeah, safety equipment. So what's the angle here?
Adam, you brought the point right to everyone's attention. First of all, if you ever been a Burnt Ramen, it is DIY, if you know what I'm saying. It's a pretty nasty show spot. I mean, like, a lot of good shows go down there, but it ain't known for its hygiene, if you know what I'm saying. Pretty rough. Not the people aren't rough. It's just nasty. It's nasty, but that's kind of part of punk rock, I guess. Although you get to a certain age, you're like, well, if it's only a band I kind of want to see, I don't need to go stand in pee-pee to watch them. I'll just, you know. But anyways, with Burnt Ramen, there's 2 competing interests here, or 3 competing interests. The first is people are saying, we need to have our DIY show spots, and the city is closing down our DIY show spots, and we'll have nowhere to go, and the only place we can have shows are places owned by Clear Channel or bars. We need a place where...
Or Gilman.
Where, well, Gilman is facing these same exact issues.
Oh, really?
Basically, the idea is that from the crust punk perspective, if you will, and that's a simplification, but from the crust punk perspective, this is the government trying to close down artistic expression and freedom of expression in order to control it. And that's the point of licensings and code and stuff, is basically to control where people can assemble and speak their mind. That's the crust punk perspective. From the city's perspective, if you will, they're saying, no, we just don't want people to get burned up. And also, we don't want to look like the jackasses that had more people get burned up after 36 people got burned up in an illegal DIY spot to begin with. The other angle here is people are saying, well, now, I mean, property value is going up all over California, especially in Richmond. Richmond's north of Berkeley and Oakland. And all those properties, I mean, of course, 10 years, actually, on a side note, I'm going to segue for a minute here. I don't know if he wants his name to be said, but a semi-famous punk rocker who's known for being pretty crusty is actually extremely rich, because like 20 years ago, he bought like a bunch of dirt cheap property in Oakland just because he wanted a bunch of property. Like, he wasn't planning on investing, and that property shot up literally like 50 times in value over the past 20 years. And now he's like super rich and never has to work again. And then talking to him, you would think the guy makes $15,000 a year, and he is super nice guy, really nice guy. So good on him is what I'm saying. Anyways, to get back to the point, is the other aspect is people are saying that this is landowners trying to evict lawful tenants, if you will, and drive up property values and basically force out people out of their property and drive up values, kind of like what is happening right now in Philadelphia, especially in West Philadelphia. So the three competing things is this people trying to protect their home spaces? Or maybe we should have some safety things so punk rockers don't get burned up when they're trying to have a show, because punk rockers are not the most sensible people when it comes to safety. I think I'm leaning on the safety issue, to tell you the truth. I mean, it's really not that hard to bring a place up to code. Well, actually, it can be very hard to bring a place up to code if you got a inspector that is looking for a little something. But to meet the bare requirements, it generally is not that hard. And also, I mean, this is just kind of a news thing. Wait 6 months, all these places will be back open, because it won't be the news anymore and people can do what they want. But safety is important. So I don't really have a firm stance on this. I think my stance is, maybe we should have smoke detectors and, you know, a way out of venues if something does happen.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on this. I think, actually, when I was up in the Bay Area, I never went to this. I never made it to this.
Well, this is North Bay.
I was in Sonoma County, so anything north was fine. I think what happens is I think this also might be an overreaction, or not an overreaction, but a reaction from the government after the fire from the other venue. So they're probably going in and making sure that this doesn't happen again. And because I mean, what happens if burnt ramen goes up in flames next? Then everyone's gonna be like, where were the safety codes for this one now? Why is this happening over and over
again? Right. And the safety guy is going to be the safety inspector guy's
ass.
And
The city is going to get sued so hard. Now, in terms of, NorCal property values, they're insane. And it's mostly due to it. Some of it's government policy, I would argue, and then a lot of it is also Silicon Valley people buying it up and having to work in San Francisco. I have friends that live up there that are paying ungodly amount of rent. I mean, just insane. I'm like, and they're living, they're not living on their own either. They're with with like a roommate or something like that, which is, that's fine. But when they're paying as much as, $3,000 to $4,000 a month, for a two bedroom or whatever, it's out of control up there. Good on whoever you're talking about for being able to cash in on that a little bit at least.
And he didn't even, he wasn't even thinking that. Like, in like 1994, he just bought a bunch of like crappy Oakland warehouses.
Now he's
super rich, and you would have no idea speaking to him. That was
the time to buy it then. He accidentally got lucky, I guess. Now just one other thing I wanted just to mention, because I forgot about this. And John, you and I have a connection because we
DNA Lounge getting closed down. Bam, I can read DNA minds. Lounge. Bam.
Yep. Because you and I saw Gnar Boots a few years ago. But I think it's not for the same reason, but it's still worth mentioning because that place rules, as does Slim's, but this is kind of sad. So I just wanted to throw that out there that it could be closing down soon.
I have a tough time with things like this because I can understand the libertarian argument about, you know, if we want to live in a fucking death trap, then let us. But I guess that the reason those, you know, I'm not one of those people is that I guess like the realism comes in here, where it's like, well, you live in a city, there's people that are ultimately responsible for making sure that, you know, humans aren't being consumed in flame. And unfortunately, sometimes that costs money. So I don't know. It's easy for me to like claim the, yeah, you know what? All right. I'm just going to be a socialist about this and be like, you know, the government's going to step in here and tell you what you have to do. But, you know, when it comes to fire code,
that's not really socialist. It's just kind of common sense.
But that's the thing. Some people, you know, you're intruding on their freedom to die, Ricky.
Yeah, but so. I just don't understand who owns this place. Is this a collective?
I think Burnt Ramen is a rental place. They rent it. It might be a collective, though. Or actually, probably. I guess it probably is a collective, and they probably bought it when it was super cheap. So,
all right. Well, we'll jump through one more story here before we get to the next song that we're going to play. So this is this, I guess, further legitimizing or delegitimizing punk culture as an integral part of Americana. The Library of Congress's National Film Registry has added The Decline of Western Civilization to their list of culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant films. This allows the 1981 documentary focusing on the late 70s, early 80s Los Angeles punk scene to be preserved by the U.S. government for the benefit of future generations. The Decline joins a select list of 700 other films, including recent new inductees, which included The Breakfast Club and Rushmore. Now, I've two thoughts on this, and then I want one of you to answer the second one here. First of all, I read this whole thing thinking that, like, oh shit, like if Joe Corey was around in America, he would be burning so much stuff. Like this is completely against his whole goal in life right now, right? Like you don't want the authority to legitimize your punk rock, so you gotta get your big rich boy pile of merchandise and burn it. So
yeah,
I'm glad there's not like a Los Angeles Joe Corey out there waiting to burn his shit. But on the other hand, and I ask this as a dirty foreigner, I am aware of the Library of Congress Film Registry because it comes up in the news from time to time. I don't actually know like what is it. Like from a practical standpoint, like is it some sort of bunker?
Oh, you mean what is it physically?
Like what is it? Like is it just an award? Like
no.
Like or are they actually doing something to preserve the film? And what does preserve mean?
That they're doing something to preserve the film, and that they take a committee decides what art or what documents or what media is historically and socially and culturally significant. It gets voted upon by a committee. Then once they determine what they feel is deserving of preservation, they literally take a copy and keep it in their building that anyone in the public can go access at any time if they want to watch it or read it or whatever.
So it's like a library.
It is literally a library.
It's not like a seed bank or something. We're like,
you like, if, like, a se- if, like a semen,
where it's hidden under the snow.
Yeah, we're like if North Korea nukes America, then you'll be able to dig like under like Cheyenne Mountain or whatever, and all of the preserved films will be there. It's not that.
Actually, in a way, it is, because everything that's in there now, starting in 1990, is digitized and saved in different locations. So even though if the building gets blasted, the other databases around the country have everything that's in the Library of Congress.
I don't know. It sounds like it is far more of a bunker thing than it maybe is. But I guess, you know, reality is more boring. I don't know.
Yeah. I when it comes to, I actually was fine with this happening. I mean, at least because, you know, West, the decline in Western civilization is it's mostly shot here, from what I remember when I watched it. And so I can get behind the historical, keeping it in, putting it in the Library of Congress for its historical value. I think that can be argued to be separate from if it's legitimizing punk or not. Whether we like it or not, punk is still a subculture from Western civilization, but, you know, America too, I mean America, and it's significant. I mean, it fits. And I don't think
it's a thing that happened and we don't own it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. No one owns it. I mean, also, I think it's a little different. I think it's a little different from the Joe Corey thing. I mean, wasn't that just like literally the queen said, it's, you know, I forgive you for writing God Save the Queen or whatever.
No, the Joe Corey thing was.
No, I mean, I'm being facetious. I don't see those two being I feel like the way England did it was definitely like trying to legitimize it. This is more of a historical thing that, unless I'm getting it wrong, I think this is slightly different.
No, I mean, like, England's was definitely more stylized. I mean, like, what it was trying to be was the idea was that they were celebrating the 40th anniversary of the subculture emerging in London. So there was a historical bent to it, but I guess the unseemly part of it is that they went and they promoted it as an event. So you can go to like punk.london. That's a website. And you can look at, you know, all of this content that they've generated where, you know, they're trying to explain to you what DIY is and they're trying to sell you stuff. Oh my God, right. So there's this element of like, okay, well, this isn't simply, you know, what was going on in the 70s under museum glass. You're actually out there trying to, you know, trying to participate in this in maybe a way that the establishment shouldn't. I mean, I can buy that argument, don't get me wrong, but I'm not going to go, you know, throw a rich person tantrum and burn a bunch of stuff either. So,
right. I think this, in this case, I'm cool with this. I'm totally fine with, preserving this.
So you're not going down the Library of Congress, Ricky.
I'm not going to go buy my Dead to Me clear vinyl and burn it in spite of the snow.
All right, Ricky, play a song and then we'll wrap the sucker up.
Okay, so I also have a Canadian band to play, and Adam will be very happy with it. It's a Dirty Nil song, but it's not a song they wrote. This year, a few months ago, Little Elephant Sessions, which is a they do like live videos. They have bring bands into their studio. I think they're in the Midwest, and they have bands play three songs and they video it. And they're really high quality performances, really, really great. And we post stuff from them every once in a while. And what they started to do this year was sell the recordings on vinyl as like 1,000 pieces each. And I of course jumped on two. Pairs did one that I got, and then also the Dirty Nil did one, and they did their cover of Provisional by Fugazi, which is the song, and that's actually that video that they did for Little Elephant was what made me realize maybe it's time to look into this band, because that ruled. So and I've been waiting to get an audio version of them doing that song, so I'm gonna play that. Check out, I mean, a bunch, the whole store on Little Elephant Sessions is pretty cool, AJJ and other people. So here is the Dirty Nil playing their cover of Fugazi's Provisional.
All right, we have two quick stories that we are going to talk about before we wrap things up this week. Before we wrap things up, I guess for 2016 altogether. So
yeah, how fitting that our 2016 podcast ends in shambles and
anyways, yeah. So, but we couldn't finish this year without John talking about the Melvins. So
end off.
Here you go, John.
Okay, so this is it. This is the split of my dreams. Melvins, Red Cross, and Off are releasing, they have released a split 10-inch. It's actually out tonight. And if you are in the Los Angeles area, you can go to the show tonight and buy it. Ricky, are you going to see Melvins, Red Cross, and Off tonight?
Isn't the Santa Ana show tonight?
It might be. And there's also one on December 31st. Ricky, you probably should go to that.
I think they're playing Santa Ana tonight, and then like Big Bear and somewhere else. I don't know. I'm going to check right now. I have a question about this.
You got basically like a date with like Scarlett Johansson or something for New Year's Eve, you probably should make the drive to go to this show. I'm just saying the show is going to be awesome.
I have a question. I'm sorry. I have a question about this release right off the bat. None of these songs by Off are new.
True. Well, first of all, let me finish my little spiel here, Ricky.
Go for it. Yeah.
So anyways, it's Melvins, Red Cross, and Off on a 10-inch, and it's super cool. The Melvins songs are reworking of Buzz Osborne solo tracks. The question about the Off and Red Cross songs, are they just previously released studio recordings? Are they alternate versions, or are they live recordings? My guess is they're going to be live recordings to fit with other previously released Melvins split 10 inches, but who knows? We'll see. This record is particularly interesting because it's Melvins, Off, and Red Cross. Who plays bass in all of those bands? Steven and Shane McDonald of Red Cross, now also of Off, and also of Melvins, at least temporarily. And so right now, tonight in California and on New Year's Eve, Steven Shane McDonald is going to play bass in Off, Melvins, and Red Cross all in one show, which should be really, really cool. So I'm really excited for this. I got one limited release online. I was looking forward to this for months, and I was so happy I got one. It was kind of my Christmas present to myself. So I'm really excited to get this. Here's the question. Melvins, much like Effed Up, the vast majority of Melvins material is available for $10 or $12 on CD. Very reasonable. Melvins release some kind of like one-off things like this, for example, like reworkings of a formerly solo track. Now it's a full band track. So nothing that's meant to be like the definitive statement of the band, just a fun diversion. This is about, I don't know, 20 minutes of music probably. The record itself is not a regular record. Each record is hand screen printed and signed by Tom Hazelmeyer of Haze XL, the artist. So Melvins, well, actually, Amphetamine Reptile Records, who puts this out, they make the argument that these records are as much art pieces as they are just records, and almost that the record itself is nearly arbitrary. It's almost meant more as an art piece. Do you guys know what this sells for?
What's it sell for, John?
Oh, a lot, probably.
$55. And sometimes Melvins sell these kind of records for $125. The reissues of their last three albums they did for $125 each. The question is, and the Melvins argument is, listen, we need to make a living. We're not going to do this for free because we have families to support. And the market will bear $55 records. If you want most of the music, you can get it for free online or for $12 on CD. So we're not going to make records cheap enough so everyone can have one. We're going to produce records at the price, at the quality level, so we can make a living. And basically, the Melvins have determined that price point is $50 for a 10-inch record, $125 for a record. And let me reiterate that these records aren't just normal records. A lot of times they're hand-done or signed. They're pretty cool up close. But is it fair for a band to charge $55 for a record like this, or is that obscene?
How limited is it?
Very limited. There's probably like 100 of them.
If it's 100, then I'm fine with it. If it was like 1,000, then I'd be like, no. No way. Real quick, you said I should go to this show. They're only doing two of these shows. The one in Santa Ana near me, or nearish me, it's like 60 miles away from me, is tonight. Then they're playing a city I have never heard of before called Pioneer Town, which sounds like an amusement park.
You should go to that.
And
probably get Chuck E. Cheese or something. That would be awesome.
It's 150 miles each way.
Dude,
that's not happening.
That's 2.5 hours, man. I've done that. I'm telling you, Ricky, this will be a once-in-a-lifetime gig.
Get
a nice little hotel, drive on up, stop at a couple record stores, make a whole day out of it.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. To be continued on this one. This is insane.
We'll go to the Santa Ana show tonight. You got time.
It started already.
Adam White, what's your take on the $55 record or the $125 record?
I mean, if it's something that's absurdly rare and unique and...
But I will point out that it's only absurdly rare because they've chosen to make it absurdly rare. However, their argument is if they don't make it rare, then nobody buys it. You see, that's their argument. I don't know if it's true or not. Their argument is if they made 1,000 of these, then no one would buy. If they made 5,000 of them, then no one would buy it because it's easy to get. The only reason people buy them is because they're super rare. But they have to make them super rare and very expensive. That's their argument. Well,
this is clearly for like the diehard fans like you.
It is.
I mean, I can't argue with the economics of it. If they, you know, they're pricing it that way because they know that someone's going to buy it. As long as they're not doing something that is going to really withhold content of any significant amount of content from people that would want to hear it, then whatever. I mean, if you can find most of this material elsewhere, if you can find this material online, if you can hop onto Spotify and listen to this stuff at some point, then whatever, sell a $55 record. If no one buys it, then you know you've priced it too much. I mean, I'm willing to let the market dictate that.
And also, I mean, how much are these going to go on the secondhand market, like on Discogs?
They used to go for like 10 times as much. Now it's between, depending on the one, it's between $10 plus to double, depending on the record. Some of them, it's a very small market of very dedicated collectors. So the market actually has each release has a very specific price point of what it's worth after it's sold out through the record label, which is very interesting. You don't often see a price point that specific, but with these records, they have like an exact price that they're worth once they've been sold out. So anyway, man, I mean, Melvin's off Red Cross. That's a cool lineup for a record. So.
No, wait, what about the off tracks on this thing?
I don't know. I'll get the record pretty shortly. I don't know if they're just studio tracks or if they're live. They did a split with Mudhoney once and they were live tracks. So I'm hoping these are live tracks. I think they will be, but I don't know.
Okay.
So I mean, if anything, because if they were studio tracks, they'd have to license them from Vice probably. And it's probably just easier for them to do live tracks. You know what I mean?
True. Yeah, I get that.
So we have one final story before this whole debacle of a podcast and year wrap up. And it's a pretty cool story, actually. So Punk Rock Bowling has announced their 2017, the initial lineup for the 2017 event. It is going to be headlined by Iggy Pop. Also, it's going to feature Coxbar, Pennywise, Discharge, The Bouncing Souls, The Interrupters, The Dickies, and a whole bunch of others. Ricky, you did this last year. John, you did one last year too, right?
Oh, I mean, I was Mr. Punk Rock Bowling last year.
You were. So the event, at least, I don't know if there is to be an East Coast version of this.
There is. It's in June. They haven't announced the date yet.
Right.
I remember announcing it later.
Yeah. So this year, the one in Las Vegas is going to be from May 26th to May 29th. And you can find all the details over at punkrockbowling.com. But Iggy Pop, that is an interesting, that is a super interesting headliner for PBR. Any thoughts, Ricky? Like you go in, I imagine.
I had such a fucking blast last year. This year, initially overall, this was an interesting list of bands because, I found I was most interested in seeing the bands I have not seen before. That includes Iggy Pop, Coxbar, and Discharge. Those three I'm most interested in seeing. I was shocked when I saw Iggy Pop headlining. He's been on my list to see for a while, so I definitely want to go to this. I mean, I've seen Pennywise, Bouncing Souls, Interrupters, Dickies, Plague Vendor. They're before. I'm not familiar with Booze and Glory or Lion's Law. I think Lion's Law is a European band. Real McKenzie's I'll definitely check out, but I'm most excited for Iggy Pop, Coxbar, and Discharge. I am interested I'm excited, but I'm interested to see how they round out the lineup as a whole. Also, the club shows. Last year was insane. It was my first time going, and I definitely want to go already. I'm just hoping for, you know, some more bands that are kind of more up my stream, like up, you know, kind of up my alley, that I don't see a ton of on here.
Yeah,
but overall I'm stoked.
Though. Presumably they're going to announce a lot more bands, because if they don't, this is a lot less bands than last year. But they might announce a lot more. You see?
Oh, I have a feeling that this is just the beginning, for sure. I mean, even the flyer says that. But yeah, I mean the. They're going to have at least for the last few years since I've been paying attention, it's a huge list. And then on top of that list, there's the club shows, and the club shows were fantastic last year.
Morning.
I went to one every night, but I know you Morning Glory
and World Inferno
in the same venue just pissed me off so much.
Descendants, it went Descendants, Morning Glory, World Inferno. And honestly, that was one of the best club shows I ever saw. Morning Glory came out and killed it. World Inferno came down and killed it.
God, just
it was awesome.
Morning Glory just won't tour.
Yeah, but you get to Melvins and off, so you can't complain.
I'm not going to Pioneer Town, John. It's not happening. Is there any chance of you bringing the fam down to Vegas?
Oh God, I no, probably not. I mean, like realistically, that's not going to happen. I've got other things on my hit list of places that I need to go see music in 2017. And you know what? That actually might be a fun, very soon future show. We should all make some public plans and commitments about where we want to go, because I think that would be a cool discussion. But anyways, no, I don't think I'm making it down to Vegas, but man, Iggy Pop, that is a cool opener.
It's an inspired choice. He's the godfather of punk rock. He might not be touring a whole lot going in the future, like he said. So this is the time to see Iggy Pop. This is the time to see him.
Totally. Totally. You know, I was even my dad was shocked that he was doing it. My dad's a light Iggy Pop fan.
Ricky's like, yeah, my dad's James Williamson.
No. It's just even he knew it. He was shocked. I'm like, yeah, he's still going. So I'm stoked to see Iggy Pop next year.
I'm looking at the Pioneer Town, California Wikipedia page, and
it's in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Ricky, you gotta go, man.
I don't understand. I think you have to go to that.
I'm not, it's like the worst route. Actually, no, it's not the worst route, but it's like a terrible, terrible. It's like near Riverside. Ricky, that, and no offense to people that live in Riverside, but it's horrible.
Ricky, 50 years from now, are you going to be mad? I mean, are you going to remember your date with Scarlett Johansson on New Year's Eve? Are you going to remember the time that you went to, that you told Scarlett, next year, baby, and drove 3 hours to see the Melvins off and Red Cross, all with Stephen Shane McDonald playing bass the entire time? What are you going to remember, Ricky?
Well,
I think Pioneer Town is like one of these old West towns.
Yeah, it's.
I think so too. I think it's like. I think it might be like a, you know, 1849 gold rush situation.
You gotta go to this, man. This is awesome.
No. It says here the town started as an old West motion picture set built in the 40s. It's not even real.
Ricky, where do you live, Ricky?
I live in the San Fernando Valley.
San Fernando Valley, San Fernando, California. I don't. Here we go, Ricky.
No, not San Fernando, California. There's. Oh, okay, whatever.
What city
it's
do
about
you live
the
in?
Same.
Ricky's only two. It's only a 2-hour drive, man. You gotta go.
Hang on a second. I'd be surprised if it's not sold out by now.
I think if you really want to go, Ricky, we might be able to get you in.
It's 150 miles.
Well, you think
that's a lot. I've seen. To be fair, I saw off like. In last month.
But did you see Off with the Melvins with Red Cross with Stephen Shane McDonald playing in all three bands in an old timey Wild West town?
I did not.
Can't you take like the you guys have like the Hyperloop now? Can't you get up there on that?
No.
Yeah, take the Hyperloop, Ricky.
Yeah, you know, let me fucking call Elon Musk and I'll, you know, we'll figure something out. No, there's like no there's LA has the worst transportation situation of all time. And everyone's like, oh, there's just no LA person talking about
Well, Ricky, it looks like you can go north of LA and avoid LA all entirely and basically just go through the country. Go through Palmdale. There are like
three ways to go. Oh.
Apple.
You guys are talking about the worst places in the state. These are terrible places.
Well, what if you weren't going to Pioneer Town to see a show? What if you were moving to Pioneer Town in a couple days?
And living in like a saloon? No thanks, Adam.
All right. Well, this is going really super long because we had a whole part of this podcast that we fucked up. So if you want to email us, it's podcast@punknews.org. We will see you in 2017. John, play a song to get us out of here.
Listen.
Wait, before you start the song, the show is sold out. I just found it. It is definitely. Wait, that's interesting. Office opening.
Huh. John, pull some strings. It is sold out.
It's also a $50 ticket. That's a lot.
If you really want to go, Ricky, there may be a way to get you in. It involves a handkerchief tied over your nose and mouth, 2 6-shooters. Listen. Been 2016 been a rough year for a lot of people. Don't ever say it can't get worse because it can always get worse. Here's hoping 2017 gets better. I'm going to tie this together. Bad Brains might not have gotten into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, but they've already been long since inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in my heart. This is Bad Brains. Keep this in mind for 2017. Bad Brains doing PMA, Positive Mental Attitude. We'll see you the next year.